Good afternoon. I call this meeting of the House Finance Committee. Let the record reflect that it is 1:36 p.m. on Monday, February 24th, 2025. Present today are Representative Allard, Representative Hannon, Representative Johnson, Representative Bynum, Representative Stack, Representative Tomaszewski, Representative Galvin, Representative Jimmy, Co-Chair Schrage. Co-Chair Foster has an excused absence. And I'm here, as you can see, Co-Chair Josephson. Also present today are our House Finance Committee staff, Committee Assistant Helen Phillips, Paige Reed Gardiner, Secretary Bree Wiley, Secretary Leah Frazier. Before we start, please mute your cell phones. In today's meeting, we will hear the Department of Fish and Game present their FY26 budget overview. With us today from the department is Commissioner Doug Vincent Lang and Administrative Services Director Bonnie Jensen. Commissioner Doug Vincent Lang and Administrative Service Director Ms. Jensen, you've already come forward. Mark that off my list. Put yourselves on the record and begin your presentation. One thing I would ask from the outset, don't assume for people like me that I understand all the terminology you use, the Department of Fish and Game. So when you're coming across an item, feel free to make it as elementary as you wish.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm willing to, suffer a loss of pride.
Okay. For the record, my name is Doug Vincent Lang, and I'm the commissioner for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. It's a pleasure to be with you today. This is one of my favorite parts of my job, is actually talking to you guys, because you guys give us money, and you should be sure as to how we're spending the money that you're giving me in terms of the best interests of the state. So thank you for the opportunity. So for Department of Fish and Game, we're basically embedded into the Constitution of the state of Alaska. That's pretty unique for a state agency, a fish and game agency. And we have basically sustainability embedded into our Constitution. And that flows into the statutes of the Fish and Game Department, which is to manage, protect, maintain, improve, and extend the fish, game, and aquatic plant resources of the state in the best interest of the economy and the general well-being of the state. But those last two statements, in the interest of the economy and the general well-being of the state, often requires a balancing act. And that is why we have an Alaska Board of Fish and Alaska Board of Game to try to help us do that balancing as we manage those resources. And then from that flows our mission statement. Next slide. We have basically three core services inside the department. The first is management. It provides opportunity to utilize fish and game resources, including expanding existing programs and developing new ones to increase harvest opportunities for fish and game. We protect and improve habitat and access to fishing and hunting opportunities and resources, including optimizing participation in hunting and fishing activities and improving harvest. And finally, we protect the state's sovereignty to manage fish and wildlife resources. The second part of our core services is stock assessment and research. You can't do management without understanding the resources you're managing. And this is basically to ensure sustainability and harvestable surpluses of fish and game resources. We do a lot. We do everything from sonars to weirs to aerial counts with airplanes to submersibles to count ocean resources. We have a wide range of tools in front of us basically to do that. And we're always willing to look at new techniques to be able to assess fish and wildlife resources. Then finally, we have public service and public involvement. We enhance public communications, provide information to customers, and most importantly, we involve the public in the management of the fish and game resources. Other states don't really have the kind of public involvement that we have. We have the Board of Fish and Board of Game I mentioned earlier. We also have 70-some advisory councils spread around the state that basically advise the Board of Fish and Board of Game on how our resources are going to be managed. Any person in the state of Alaska can submit a proposal to the Board of Fish and Board of Game on how they want to see our resources managed. That's unique. That's an opportunity for people to get involved in our fish and game resources that is unlike in any other state.
And, Commissioner, am I right that the local advisory boards by the way, I managed to win a number of elections to get here, but I once ran for my local advisory board and didn't make the cut. But am I right that they rule make for regions, that there's no further authority needed for them to implement sort of rules within, for example, the city and borough of Juneau?
So they have the authority over a couple very specific areas. They can eliminate antlerless moose hunts. But they can comment on any proposal that has come in, and they can actually put in comments to the Board of Fish and Board of Game. But they have their rulemaking is very limited to certain instances. And I think what you're talking about is the trapping regulations. Their municipalities have won a court case recently in the Supreme Court that allowed them to have the authority to restrict hunt trapping in very specific instances for public safety.
Okay.
We also have a public notice and outreach process that basically involves our licensing program and permitting for participation in fishing, hunting, and trapping. So we do a lot in trying to get people not only to be involved in the management of the resources, but actually to take advantage of those resources. We have loaner programs for fishing rods. We have how to go crab fishing if you've never gone crab fishing, and how to we do ice fishing clinics all throughout the summer, winter times in throughout Alaska. So we have a big public service and public involvement process. Next slide. This is the department leadership team. I have two deputy commissioners, Rachel Baker, who's kind of, I call the Secretary of State, kind of deals with things outside the jurisdiction of the state of Alaska, kind of that 300 to 200 mile zone. She represents me in the North Pacific Fishery Management Council, and right now they're tackling the issue of chum salmon bycatch in the Bering Sea. She just got out of a contentious meeting in Anchorage in February that dealt with the developing a proposal that they'll act on in December that will potentially restrict chum salmon bycatch in a corridor that is known to catch Western Alaskan chum salmon. So it was a very contentious meeting. Ben Mulligan is more dealing with the internal politics. He deals with the Federal Subsistence Board, Board of Fisheries, and Board of Game, and also runs our habitat division. Then I have Bonnie Jensen right next to me. She's our administrative services director. Joe Feichel, who's behind me, he's our legislative liaison. And we just hired Shannon Mason, who's a special assistant on communications. And then my directors are Forrest Bowers, who's acting director for the Division of Commercial Fisheries. Israel Payton is the current director of the Division of Sport Fish. Ryan Scott, who grew up in the Wildlife Division, is the current director of the Wildlife Division. Christy Tibbles is the executive director for Board of Game. Art Nelson is the executive director of Board of Fisheries. And we are very close to having a hire for the subsistence director. I think we're going to get an approval one way or the other by the end of this week. So I'm very proud that we're going to have that section finally filled. And then the habitat section, as I said, is we don't have a – when we – 8 years ago, we made that into a section from a division, and Ben Mulligan now oversees that habitat section as the director for that program.
Yes, question from Representative Jimmy.
Thank you, Co-Chair Justin, and through the chair. Is it my understanding, or am I wrong, but there hasn't been a subsistence director for the third year now?
When I became commissioner, we decided to not fill the director's positions for habitat and subsistence at the time because those positions were taken outside my department. If I would have rehired them, I would have had to have absorbed the cost of that. At the time, we chose that wasn't a good thing. Last year, you added money into our budget the legislature did, added money into our budget to hire a subsistence director. We've been in the looking for one for the last 6 months, and I think we're very close to having one hired right now that will fill that role and reinstate that as a division.
And because it looks like there's – oh, I'm sorry, follow-up. And since it looks like there's still no subsistence director, where has that money gone that was funded for the director of subsistence?
It's still in the subsistence division.
And follow-up. Without a director, who has been leading the division?
I have been.
And follow-up. How much time have you spent performing the duties of a subsistence director?
Well, we have a deputy operations manager like we have in all the other divisions, and that person operates the financial piece of it and everything else. But most of the involvements in terms of leading policy discussions, I've been leading those at the Board of Fish and Board of Game.
Last follow-up.
Yes, last follow-up.
And you state that you guys are actively looking for a division of subsistence, and could you explain what the active recruitment efforts are and how much time on that per week do you spend on that, and what does that look like?
As I said, we're very close to having a hire. I think a job offer has been offered. We're just waiting to hear back at this point in time.
Right. Thank you.
As to the second part of her question, I'd be curious, how much time do you spend doing the work of subsistence director?
Well, it's very hard to tell because subsistence is a priority for the state. So when we talk about management of commercial fisheries or management of a wildlife resource, where I was asking questions as to how that subsistence priority would be met. So I would say at least probably 30% of my time is dealt with in some manner. Now, you have to remember the subsistence division is statutorily defined. It's not a management division. It's not making management calls to open and close fisheries or hunts across the state. It's to collect scientific information. So, you know, we make sure that the information is in, that the boards need to consider customary and traditional uses is incorporated into every department comment to the Board of Fish and Board of Game.
Representative Stapp.
Thank you, Chair Justin. Through the chair to Director Lang, thanks for being here. Representative Jimmy's line of questioning has kind of got me interested. Just wanted to know if there's anything else that we've asked you guys to fund that hasn't been done yet that we should probably be aware of. Thank you. Through the chair.
Good question. Mr. Commissioner.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think what that may be. I think we're on full course to basically do everything that you've asked. And it hasn't been that we haven't not wanted to fill the subsistence director position. We're just trying to find the right person. A lot of the people that I contacted early on in that thought it was opening and closing fisheries. And we had to make sure that we got the right person that had the knowledge and experience in terms of navigating the science behind customary and traditional uses, because it is a scientific group that they're leading that has that expertise. And once I think we found that right now. So,
Representative Allard.
Thank you. You just kind of hit on the last point in regards to what Representative Jimmy had said. So you said you think you may have found that person. I was going to kind of come in and ask you, have you been interviewing, and how many interviews have you guys actually had?
So, or through the years, through the months here, I've probably talked to about 5, 6, 7 different people. And I think, you're going to be happy with the person that I've selected.
So, Commissioner, as to the Habitat Director monies, do we still fund those in the event that you might hire someone?
No, that money was pulled in the first year as a commissioner, and I've never gotten it back. So we basically have agreed that we would fill that by having the deputy commissioner fulfill that role of the director.
All right.
There's no money in the budget for a director.
Okay, and I know there's some concern about that, but you're not asking for funding for it either.
No, I'm not. Okay.
Yes, Representative Jimmy.
Thank you, Co-Chair, Josephson, through the chair. So what would you say the salary base is for the subsistence of director?
The salary and benefits or salary and...
Just the salary for the Division of Subsistence Director.
I think it's about 145.
Follow?
145,000.
And it's been about 3 years that there hasn't been division of subsistence director.
No,
correct?
The money to approve the hire of a division of subsistence director and reinstate the division was made in this current fiscal year. It was not made before that.
Okay. But then that money, mm-hmm. follow up, mm-hmm. so that funding for the subsistence director is still in the budget. And does it accumulate over years?
It's been in the budget since July 1st of 2024. It has not been in the budget before that period of time.
Okay.
So we haven't been able to hire it for 6 months, so there's 6 months of salary in that side that budget yet. And it's still housed within the Division of Subsistence.
Thank you.
Representative Galvin and then Hannon.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. Through the chair, I remember Commissioner having a small discussion about this because I was new to hearing these overviews, and I remember seeing this position still in your org chart 3 years ago and 2 years ago. And at that time, I remember asking about this position, and at that time, I remember, fill me in if I'm incorrect, but essentially you said that it wasn't needed at the time and that you were covering for it. And I guess what I want to know is it stayed in the org chart, I assume, for a reason. So there was work happening with within your department on this topic, but it held that position still. And I guess my question is, why would it have still been there 3 years ago and 2 years ago? To me, that means it's part of your budget.
So it was like the habitat section that you saw. Go back one slide.
Uh-huh.
You know, we still have a habitat section. We had claimed that it was a subsistence section because we no longer made it a division. So we still had functional responsibilities under state statutes to collect that information. So I was fulfilling that role.
Okay.
I think what I told the committee at the time was I didn't want to hire a director until I had the money in the budget to do that.
Mm.
And thus I was fulfilling that role. I would have hated to have seen us have to take a between salary and benefits, a $200,000 cut to that section, which has a relatively small budget, and basically have to lay off two subsistence resource specialists to hire a director.
Thank you.
Now that you've given me the money, I'm comfortable hiring the director.
Thank you.
All right, slide five.
Chairman.
Sorry, my apologies. Representative Hannon has a question.
Thank you, Chair Josephson. Commissioner, I want to just close the loop on this dialogue, and since not everyone has a historical memory, you've referred to those positions went away when you became commissioner. Could you place that in a year date so that instead of talking about last year or 3 years, that we,
I think it was 2018 when the governor first got elected.
Follow up. And the positions, the director of subsistence and the director of habitat, were both empty at that point, and you chose to do away with those as directorships instead of laying off the division staff underneath that.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Slide. Representative Jimmy has a question.
One question. Could you, two questions, it's a two-part question. Could you please explain everything as a director that you would do and what you've been doing for the subsistence area as well?
So, through the chair, so a director basically manages the division. And for our major three divisions, those people number up there's hundreds of people within those divisions. The habitat and subsistence section each number in the tens of people. So it's not a very large division. So that's why I made the choice early on. Did it make sense to lay off two staff members to hire a director? A director basically manages that group of people. They manage the functions they're doing, the research functions and subsistence. They manage the development of Board of Fish and Board of Game comments that we submit when the board is considering regulatory proposals. And they also answer questions regarding subsistence and the use of subsistence resources during board deliberations. Those are the major functions. Since I was attending most of the Board of Fish and Board of Game meetings, I felt comfortable doing that. And I also fulfilled the role of reviewing those board comments when they came in.
Follow up?
Less so than doing the actual subsistence research, because we have a subsistence research director that actually reviews the subsistence research plans that are going in place in the surveys.
I'm sorry, it seems like I don't understand, but could you explain the subsistence duties that you would do since you took on that position yourself?
It's basically looking at the division, managing its finances, managing its personnel, and managing its functions, which include conducting research, finding money to do that research, and basically developing the regulatory comments to the Board of Fish and Board of Game.
Okay. All right, slide five.
Okay. So, yeah, I used to ask my staff when I first became commissioner, are we basically using the state's money wisely? And I think that's a good question, because why would you fund something if you're not getting a return on investment? So basically our analysis shows that we turn a $250 million investment, of which about $70 million is general fund, into a return of over $14 billion annually. So I think we're doing a pretty good job of taking resources that you're giving us and returning it on that investment coming backwards. This year's budget has no reduction in services as a result of the proposed budget. The proposed budget includes new funding for fisheries and wildlife resource management, which we'll get into shortly. And this includes funding for maintenance of vessels and aircraft, restoration of commercial fisheries, funding to maintain surveys, assessments, and fisheries enhancement activities. this is the first time where we're going to actually have some maintenance money to pay for some of the things that we have in the proposed budget. That's something that's been sorely needed and something I've been asking for years.
Slide six.
So we're organized into seven different budget components. I want to take special note on the facilities operation and maintenance components. These are new and have been placed in all the major divisions. The structural change will help us address specific component needs to comply with Alaska Statute 3707-020E, which states that these costs must be presented separately. Starting from the top left of the slide in yellow, we have the third largest division in the department, the Division of Sportfish. In 2024, the Anchorage and Fairbanks hatcheries and Southeast hatchery components were created and separated from the sport fisheries, but are still managed by the Division of Sportfish. This division is heavily funded by federal and fish and game funds and is responsible for oversight and management of Alaska's recreational fisheries. They also deal a lot with the in-river personal use fisheries across the state. The next is our second largest division in green, the Division of Wildlife Conservation. The division's budget is made up of two major components, wildlife conservation and hunter education public shooting ranges. Wildlife conservation is also heavily funded by federal fish and game funds to manage and improve opportunities to hunt, trap, and view wildlife. Wildlife conservation staff also manage three public shooting ranges and provide hunter education services across our state that encourage new generations of hunters and support good hunting practices as well as firearm and wildlife safety. Moving down, we have the statewide support services in gray, which consists of the Commissioner's Office, Administrative Services, Boards of Fisheries and Game, Advisory Committees, the Exxon Valdez Oil Spill Trustee Council, and Facility Maintenance Components. This various components serve different functions, ranging from the Commissioner's Office that provides policy direction, budgetary oversight and supervision of the department's divisions and programs, to the Administrative Services Unit that provides administrative services to all of our divisions and keeps us functioning, to our Boards of Fish and Board of Game and Advisory Committee components, whose work supports the Board's regulatory processes and provides information to the public on how to participate in that process. Next, we have the Habitat section in brown on the right side of the slide. This section of Fish and Game completes the variety of duties, including reviewing development projects and issuing permits under Title 16 Activities for Fish-Bearing Waters. Let me just pause there real quick. As a Commissioner of Fish and Game, I got Title 16 authority over development activities in navigable waterways. I don't think there's another commissioner in the union that has those authorities. In essence, I have to make sure that any development that's in anadromous waterways is going to protect and conserve fish and game resources. That's a pretty significant step and a pretty significant power that you give the Commissioner of Fish and Game to ensure that we have sustainability of our fish and game resources. The light blue is for our Division of Subsistence. Again, now this is a division. It used to be a section. The division conducts research and is not a management division. Its mission is defined under Alaska Statute 1605-094, in which directs staff to scientifically gather, quantify, evaluate, and report information about customary and traditional uses of fish and game and wildlife resources.
Representative Galvin.
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Josephson, this is a question for you, Commissioner. Yeah. I have heard you say a few times now, and looking at slide five and six, you referred to federal dollars also supporting the work that you're doing, and actually it looks like to quite a high degree. And I just wondered if you had any concerns around some of the changes that are happening with regard to investments in Alaska. Are you worried at all that you may be losing some of the funding, and that you, and if so, would you be asking the state to step in?
Yeah, of course it worries me, because I think a third of our budget, a little bit over 40% of our budget, is federal funding. So a lot of that federal funding, though, that we're getting is kind of guaranteed, like the Dingell Johnson and PR, which is safe. Some of the other funding from marine mammals and other things, yeah, we're looking at it very carefully, and we're keeping very close tabs on what that may mean. I suspect federal agencies, as they tighten their belts, will try to retain more of the federal money that they get and make less block grants out to the states, as well as potentially increasing overhead rates on some of those things that they take off the top. But, yeah, we're watching it very closely right now.
Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Josephson. Commissioner, I'm interested in where are where you are focusing invasive species work. And I know that we don't have a lot of money, and hopefully we've got grants, but of course we have increasing both aquatic and overland. You know, we're getting a lot of those wild cats coming in from Canada down major rivers, and we don't have cougars listed in our harvestable species. And I'm sure it's got good and bad and disease predictions with it. So where is most of our invasive species work being done within your agency, and do we need more?
So most of the invasive species work on the aquatic side is done by the Division of Sport Fish, and it's conducted under a variety of federal grants and Dingell Johnson grants. The wildlife side, it would be covered by the wildlife section and wildlife division. We don't have nearly as many issues. I think we had one issue where we had mule deer coming in from Canada, and the Board of Game basically said you can shoot a mule deer as long as you return the carcass back to the state of Alaska. So we wanted to make sure we had better accountability of how those animals were moving in and whether they were bringing ticks in from Canada. So it depends on what species you're talking about. Could we do more? Green crab is a good case. You know, I think we're trying to figure out what the spread of green crab are. Is it realistic at the end of the day that we're going to eliminate green crab? Probably not. But we should try to minimize the impact green crab are having. So we're looking at different strategies to do that.
Thank you.
Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster, or correction, Co-Chair Josephson, and through the chair, thank you for being here today. I was talking some of the conversation going on, and you'd mentioned marine mammal, and obviously we have major concerns in Southeast Alaska about marine mammal predation on nearshore invertebrates. And I was wanting to know under what section you guys would be keeping an eye on that, and specifically what kind of funding allocations you'd be putting into monitoring, not only monitoring, but studying those particular impacts on our Southeast communities.
Yes. So marine mammals were basically under state control until the federal government passed the Marine Mammal Protection Act. Mm-hmm. Since then, we've kind of lost management authority over those species. We still have a trust responsibility over those species, but we've lost direct management control. And a good classic example is what happened with sea otters. When before the Marine Mammal Protection Act, we had management control over those. As a state, we decided to reestablish that in Southeast Alaska, the sea otter population. When we reestablished them, we had every intent of managing them as a functional part of the ecosystem. Once the Marine Mammal Protection Act got passed, it called for its optimal sustained population of sea otters. So rather than what we saw as a population of 20 to 40,000 sea otters spread across Southeast Alaska, the Act calls for something on the order of 120,000 sea otters, which is having pretty significant impact on fisheries and resources up and down the coast of Southeast Alaska. We've tried several times to change the Marine Mammal Protection Act to get that back into a functional part of the ecosystem definition unsuccessfully. Now we're hoping that we'll have another chance at it under the new Congress. But to me, you don't want to manage one species at the expense of the rest of the ecosystem. We got to manage the ecosystem as a whole and manage all species kind of to manage for their overall long-term viability across all the species complexes.
Just a quick follow-up.
Thank
you, Co-Chair Jessison. So us making that attempted effort to revisit this, is this something that the department is doing directly, or is this something that we're going to be doing in partnership with the Department of Law?
Well, I've been reaching out to State of Washington. They're very interested in solving this issue because they have significant marine predation on several listed species of salmonoid coming back in the Columbia River. So is Oregon interested. So I think we're trying to find partners to try to address this issue. And Department of Law clearly has some role in this because we're having commingling of the Endangered Species Act and the Marine Mammal Protection Act that we're trying to deal with. And we can't deal with that independently with the federal agencies. We're having to deal with it in court, unfortunately.
Thank you. It's a quick comment, Co-Chair Josephson. And I appreciate that. It's good information. I absolutely want to follow up outside of here for that, and if there's anything that I believe the legislature can do to expedite this, we I would request that that information be given to the co-chair so that we can take that under consideration. Thank you.
I'll just add that last time I tried to fix the Marine Mammal Protection Act, I think I got 50,000 emails. It's a very sensitive subject with a lot of different people. Finally, we have the Division of Commercial Fisheries and TEAL, which consists of four regional components and a statewide component, which houses the director's office, administrative support staff, information technology, and all the labs, including the pathology lab and the genetics lab. I can tell you the genetics lab is something that we had put in place about 15 years ago. It is one of the world-class genetics lab. We've cutting-edge work on doing it, and now we have other states following through on what we've established. We have baselines of salmon that are just unbelievable. I'm trying to figure out the chum salmon piece of it, but we'll get there. CFEC will present their own perspective to you on their budgets, so you will see the numbers in the following tables do not include the CFEC's budget. The Division of Commercial Fisheries manages the state's commercial fisheries and most subsistence and personal use fisheries. With that, I'm going to turn it over to our Administrative Services Director, and she's kind of going to go through some of the details in the budget. Again, thank you for your time, and you'll be hearing from me in the Capitol shortly.
Okay. Director?
Good afternoon, Chair Josephson and members of House Finance. Thank you for the opportunity to present our FY26 budget request. For the record, my name is Bonnie Jensen, and I'm the Administrative Services Director for the Department of Fish and Game. I will be providing a department-level overview of our budget and going over the proposed changes included in the FY26 Governor's request. Slide 7 is a comparison slide showing overall funding for the Governor's proposed FY26 budget compared to prior years. We will go into the details of these increases in future slides, but I wanted to make special mention of the total overall increase from FY25 to FY26. The department received funding and authority increases in salary, retirement, and health insurance in UGF of roughly $1.4 million. In federal authority, it was around $1 million and $750,000 in fish and game funds. Other funding sources received increases as well, based on how the positions were budgeted, but those three funding sources received the highest increases. The large increase in other is primarily due to an increase in interagency authority for the new facility maintenance components in administrative services. This will allow administrative services to accept rental payments from all divisions and pay facility rent to state-owned and non-state-owned facilities.
Director, we have a question from Representative Stapp.
Thank you, Chair. Josephson, through the chair to the director. Can you tell me the number again? You said the increase in general funds through on the insurance side, personal services, through the chair.
Director.
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, it is $1.4 million, and roughly.
Follow up.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson, through the chair. $1.4 million out of a total of how many PCNs in the department?
Director.
Through the chair, Representative Staff, we have 1,440 positions.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. And Director, can you explain the jump in federal management versus the previous actuals that's shown on slide 7?
Chair Josephson, are you talking about the actuals versus management plan?
Yes.
I would have to get back to you on that. I'm assuming it is in wildlife conservation and sport fisheries.
Yeah, I'll take a shot at that. It's basically two things. Wildlife Division has its PR funds have substantially increased because of people buying firearms and other things. The other thing is we got a over the time we've been securing more money for the Yukon River in terms of federal funding, and that has come through earmarks through Senator Murkowski's office, as well as we got some new money for the Pacific Salmon Treaty to deal with mitigation in Southeast Alaska.
Okay. All right, let's go to slide 8.
Here we have the same breakdown, but by line item. The FY25 and FY26 difference column contains the governor's request as well as personal service increases and line item adjustments that show an accurate projection of our budget. Again, the increase in personal services can be mainly attributed to salary increases, and the increase in services is mainly interagency receipt authority for the new facilities components.
Director and Commissioner, we have a question from Representative Stapp, then from Representative Galvin.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Justin, through the chair. Just last point on the insurance thing, I just did some quick math. It's like almost $1,000 per PCN, assuming all those are filled. And I want to say that's considerably higher than the rest of the departments that are asking for the same adjustment to, for their annual insurance premium adjustment. So do you have any reason why that your guys' number would be substantially higher than anyone else's when you're all under the same plan, through the chair?
Through the chair, Representative Stapp. It's not just insurance. It's also salaries and other adjustments. I would have to go through the change records.
Follow-up, Mr. Kocher.
Yes, follow-up.
Thank you, Kocher, Justin, through the chair. Yeah, if you could you just maybe break that number out for us and get that to us with the permission of the chair, of course. Thank you.
If I could add, I think most of that increase is this 8.5% salary increase that was covered in the supervisors' union. I think that was a pretty big jump, and that was incorporated through the governor's request in reflective of that line 100. We have not. I think we're only requesting one new PCN in terms of this request going forward. So this is basically status quo in personnel, but covering the salary, the union agreed to contracts.
Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson, through the chair. I'm not sure if you would like to answer this, Director Jensen or the Commissioner, but the question is around the services line. If you're looking at 2024 to 2026 is a pretty big jump, and I think it's about 66% growth. And I'm not sure if there's a difference in the definition maybe at that point. Was there a definition change or just something that doing in your accounting you have changed something up there? And then also if you would articulate the difference between services and personal services. But question one is really that just the growth in services itself, if you have a context to give us for that.
Director.
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, $8 million of the change of between 25 to 26 is for interagency receipt authority. The other changes, I would have to go in and look at details, but it would refer to what the commissioner was talking to in his previous statement.
Okay. If I could, I think,
Commissioner.
If I'm trying to think back to FY24 to FY25, the legislature had a big discussion as to whether or not where EVA should land inside the department. I think we landed inside the department. I think we reabsorbed EVOS at that point in time, and I think that's about a $20 million program that we send out and with contracts to the different entities that are conducting research. But I'll get back to you to make sure that's what it is. But I'm thinking back 3 or 4 years, and I think that's what it was.
Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Representative Josephson. For the benefit of those of us who are eligible for AARP and need to hear it more than once, Ms. Jensen, could you reprise for us the guidance you were given from OMB about how that interagency receipts for maintenance and operation was to be done? And you do not have to give us the full OMB directives that you were given, but the summation that has resulted in about $8 million showing in your budget in a different way.
Director.
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, sure. So we have to present these expenditures separately. So we created a new component. We created lots of new components. We had to do some within separate RDUs because we have the labor, trades, and crafts PCNs that have to be moved over to those components, and we wanted those to remain within the relative divisions. But as far as rental facilities, we can pay all of those out of one component within administrative services. And so nothing really changes except for this allows administrative services to take the payments from the divisions and pay out of one component so that we can present them separately to you.
Thank you.
Okay. Yes, Commissioner.
If I could, I think we didn't answer one question from Representative Galvin. What's the difference between personnel services and services? One is the personnel that are housed within the Department of Fish and Game. That's all our Line 100. The services is what we put out as contracts.
Thank you.
Okay. Helpful. Thank you. Slide 9. Unless there was more you wanted to touch on 8.
I did want to touch on one more thing, Chair Jefferson, and Representative Stapp just walked in. I do want to add that the commissioner said that we are adding one position. We are adding two positions and cutting one, and that does contribute to the UGF increase as well.
Perfect timing. Thanks.
Okay. So netting one. Slide 9.
Slide 9 provides a visual of how the funding sources are broken down in the department. On the left, we can see that the largest funding source is federal funding, which consists of 35% of our overall budget. In our agency, we receive both competitive and non-competitive grants. Our second largest funding source is other, which makes up about 33% of our budget. Next is unrestricted general fund at 28%, which consists of unrestricted general fund and general fund match. Our smallest is designated general fund at 4%, which consists of commercial crew license fees and test fish. The pie chart on the right shows how the other funding source is broken down, with fish and game funds having a significantly higher percentage of 48% compared to the 31% of interagency receipts and statutory designated program receipts, CIP receipts, Exxon Valdez oil spill, and interagency oil and hazardous waste have much less authority.
Okay.
So I'm going to take over for a second here. So, we have PR and Dingell Johnson Fund. That's federal funding that's collected off this excise taxes for fishing licenses and on the hunting side, hunting gear as well as guns and ammunition. That was created by Congress almost 70 years ago now. It was basically to try to rebuild fish and wildlife populations across the nation, which were decimated at the time. And that excise tax has largely been in existence for all 70 of those years. For states to gain access to that fishing tax that's collected, we have to basically provide a guaranteed source of match, and that's a 25% match to the 75% that they give us. Alaska decided to go down that path and find that match, and we dedicated the Fish and Game Fund as a match source moving forward. And that Fish and Game Fund is collected basically on the sale of licenses, fish and game and hunting licenses and tags and revenues that goes into that. We have had a very successful model since statehood in collecting these fish and game resources using the Fish and Game Fund as match, and the Fish and Game, the voters of Alaska actually voted to amend the Constitution to make that a dedicated funding source for this. It's one of the only few dedicated funding sources in the state. But that has really been a successful program in terms of fish and game management, and one all 50 states are gaining the benefits from. The purpose of the program is, again, to restore, conserve, manage, and enhance wild birds and wild mammals and their habitats on Pittman-Robertson's side. Public use and access to wildlife resources. We have a big program that basically builds new boat launches and new access points, waysides to get hunters out in the field, and really hunter education development of shooting ranges. They're distributed based on apportionment. Alaska is a big state, so we get the maximum apportionment. We don't have as many people as other states, but we're at the max apportionment, so we receive a 5% match of that. And on the, we'll see later that the fishing game side, on the fish side, it's relatively stable, but on the hunting side, it really has substantially increased, and that division has substantially grown. Next slide.
And the PR funds cannot be used for intensive management. Is that correct?
We really don't want to use those because there's a lot of constraints that are put on that for intensive management.
And the other why, thing that why we, are those constraints there, if you know?
Federal agencies have different management criteria for their lands. So, for instance, if you're going to do intensive management on federal lands, it's a whole different system than doing it on state lands. Almost all of our intensive management programs are conducted on state lands under the state intensive management authority. We can use federal funds to collect the baseline information to inform intensive management activities, but the actual intensive management activity themselves are conducted with a stamp that the legislature approved on the hunting license that provides funding for intensive management activities.
Right. I think that was a Representative Tallarico bill from 10 years ago or so. And is that the only source that's used for IM?
We can use that or we can use fish and game funds.
The constitutional fund.
Yeah, the constitutional fund. But we pretty much use the intensive management surcharge to do most of our intensive management activities.
Am I right? I know this isn't a budgetary issue, but just briefly, am I right that for the first time the Board of Game is looking at adding sheep to the list of prey for which an IM program could be launched?
Well, they are actually thinking about it because sheep populations are pretty dire condition across the state right now, mostly because of either predation on ewes, which are very small, the young sheep that are first born, or because of bad winter conditions. So they're looking at a way to try to get those sheep rebuilt quicker. They haven't reached a conclusion there yet. It's an ungulate, so it could potentially be there, but almost all of our IM programs now focused on either caribou or moose.
Okay. Let's go to slide 11 on Dingle Johnson.
So this is the other side of the equation. This is the fish side. And basically, the Dingle Johnson program was basically to do the fish side of the wildlife equation. I won't go into this. But same thing as 75-25% match. Next slide. And this is the Fish and Game Fund. Again, we dedicated that Fish and Game Fund. We put it into place so that we have a guaranteed match for that 5% on those surcharges. This really, of all the things that we've done in the state, you know, we have guaranteed a dedicated funding source for fish and game management moving forward and fulfill our constitutional responsibility for sustainable management. And it really hasn't cost the state anything in terms of, you know, general fund match for the Division of Wildlife Conservation or the Division of Sport Fish. Pretty amazing story. And again, the diversion of funds is prohibited. You can't divert these funds into other activities or we lose the potential of gaining access to the PR and Dingle Johnson funds.
Okay. Question, Commissioner, from Representative Jimmy.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson, and through the Chair. As you know, in Alaska, everybody loves to hunt, and I'm an active hunter as well. In my district, people do pay their fees to get hunting license and tags, but yet they have such a hard time going out to access what they're hunting for. And in my district, some people cannot afford to ride up a river for 4 hours, you know, upstream. And how would you be able to assist District 38 with better hunting when they're so far, but yet when they come in near close contact in villages?
Yeah, so I was through the chair. I was just talking to the president of the Calista Corporation this morning, and that we have a lot of the same issues. We have competition near communities, and he asked what could be done. I can't close areas around. That's a Board of Game decision, but we walk through how you could walk through a Board of Game, develop a Board of Game proposal that they would consider in terms of providing preferential access to residents, for instance, the state of Alaska versus non-residents in certain waterways. That's done in the Togiak area right now, and so we're going to help them through that process. I can't do that per se, but if there's I can close other hunts to provide for the subsistence priority when it's not being met. So, again, it depends on whether it's on federal or state land that you're talking about. Some of that land in the Cusco is in the Yukon Delta. So that's when I make it, it's for all residents of Alaska, which is a state subsistence priority. When the federal government does it, it's for people living in rural areas.
Follow.
So
in my district, even though they can't hunt at certain times, we do have issues of where the moose population is growing out there, and they're going into the villages, putting children at risk, or even the population at risk, yet we're not allowed to hunt them. But as Indigenous people of Alaska, I do believe that we have the right to hunt when we can, and it's not everything will be utilized and not wasted. How can you help with that?
So We have open and closed season for moose, and we try to keep moose during calving periods closed. And we try to have that open season for after mating is done and open for there. For ceremonial purposes, we often open hunts outside of those seasons for funeral purposes and other things. That happens. But in terms of having just general 12-month hunting seasons, you know, we're kind of careful that we don't over-harvest the moose population. So if you want to have an extended season for certain purposes, that would have to go through the Board of Game process.
Follow up.
So you're telling me that if a moose walks into a village and it's going to go attack a kid or a group of people, we can't do it, that they can't do anything. They just call Fish and Game, say, hey, there's a moose running towards us. What do we do?
You can always take an animal in defense of life and property. So if you're threatened by an animal, you can always take that. You can't keep that animal then for personal purposes. You have to surrender that back to the state. But to defend your life and property, you can take any animal.
Follow up. So you're saying we can shoot. So if somebody's being attacked in the village and then they shoot the moose, they can't keep the meat. They have to send it in, which is going to cost a lot of air freight and time.
You have to surrender it to the nearest fish and game office or protection offices, and they're probably going to likely donate that to a food pantry in the local area.
But as natives, why wouldn't we be able to keep it?
I think the law was written that way because we don't want people going out and saying that they shot an animal in defense of life and property, then taking a moose out of season. We certainly don't. We want to protect life and property. And we want to make sure that that animal then is returned back to the state, and then that animal is typically, again, I say, returned to the local food pantry so that it's not going to waste.
Well, I'm sure there'd be local follow-up there, but I'm sure there, well, thank you. You gave me an idea. Thank you.
Okay, yeah. I don't think we want people in Anchorage shooting moose in defense of life and property than keeping the moose.
Hit them with the cars.
Yeah.
It's undeniable that we hit them with cars. Representative Staff, then Shruggy.
Thank you, Co-Chair Justin, to the Chair. So I think Representative Jimmy brings up a pretty good point. So there are folks, and say if you're in Kwitluk or Tluksuk, and you got to travel upriver like a few hours. To me, you know, obviously I live in Fairbanks, so obviously there's kind of nuance there. You know, you don't want me taking a bull or a calf out of season. But, I mean, is there anything that we should look at as far as policy goes? Because it seems a little ridiculous to tell somebody in Kwitluk that they got to wrap up the meat and then air freight it to Bethel so it can maybe go to the pantry or something and there. So is there any type of policy or there's got to be some nuance to this policy is, I guess, what I'm saying through the chair.
I've never experienced a time where an enforcement officer is going to tell the individual they have to airship that meat into Fairbanks or some other place to surrender it to the state. They're going to work with you to try to get it surrendered into that local community.
Okay. Follow up.
thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I don't know if it's the listening to Skidmore in me or not, but when you say there hasn't ever been a situation that has happened, doesn't actually mean that it couldn't actually happen, as Mr. Skidmore always reminds me of through the chair. So you're saying it could actually happen, it just doesn't, because of the nature of your officers through the chair.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. I don't know if that's cold comfort or not. Representative Shruggy.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. I have a constituent who will frequently remind me or inform me that he has concern with the price of hunting tags for out-of-state residents that want to come up here and hunt. Can you talk to me and tell me a little bit about how we come up with the pricing structure for out-of-state hunting licenses and tags for various hunts? And, you know, do we try to make that competitive? Do we look at how much these things go for at auction when they're auctioned off? How do you come up with the pricing structure, and how can I justify the current rates to my constituent who has that concern?
Well, you set the rates. The legislature, they're in statute, so the legislature sets the rates. We look at them routinely. According to the Commerce Clause, we've got to be a little bit careful. We have to make sure that the increased rate that a non-resident is paying for can be justified based on the expense that we're using to manage the resource. So we typically look at them about once every 2 or 3 years, and if we come back to you, we say they need adjustments. But it's your call as to what you want to set those rates at.
Follow up.
Tell me more about the recommendation that you make to the legislature. What form is that in? Is that a report that's provided to us that I would have access to? And then, is there, from your perspective and your knowledge of the issue, room for us to increase those rates? Do the costs justify a substantially increased rate for some of these tags?
The last time we looked at it, the rates for resident versus non-residents was equivalent to what the cost associated with it. I can't remember how many years ago. I think that was a year or two ago. But we'll get you that report.
And, that'd be great. I'd appreciate that. Thank you.
All right. Let's go to slide 11. Or we sort of did 11. I think we're at 12. Representative Allard.
Thank you. I wanted to circle back around about the subsistence and how, you know, we don't want to abuse the system when it comes to, through the chair. Sorry, I apologize for that. I just want to make sure that when you were saying, you know, if there's an animal, you're defending your life or your property, I just didn't want it to be abused. And my question to you is, have you ever, I mean, you kind of hit on it. I just want to make sure that there's more of a reason why you have that law in place. Have you noticed it being taken advantage of in any different parts of Alaska?
No. The troopers, through the chair, the troopers will always go out and investigate an animal taken out of season, to make sure that it was taken in defense of life and property. And, you know, to the extent that the individual can prove that, they'll usually surrender the meat. The trooper will take that into possession, and then trooper doesn't want to deal with that meat anything more than anybody else. They look for the nearest place to put it, and if there's a church in that village or wherever else where that can be distributed out to everybody, that's what they do.
Can I just do a quick follow-up?
Yes, follow-up.
So there were some remote areas that Representative Stapp was mentioning, and have you ever? I want to hear a real story, I guess is what I'm trying to get at. Has there been a situation in a remote area where the troopers like, and that the village can decide right then and there, whether it's not like he was saying, put on a river, you know, put up shrimp? How do we address that?
Because
Representative Jimmy has very valid points, and I would like to help her address those issues if possible.
Commissioner. Yeah,
through the chair. So muskox up in Nome. We had a muskox kill an individual that was defending his dog team. And there are people living in fear of muskox now in certain areas. So we worked out a thing where we could work with the local police department as well as our staff up there, that if people felt fearful, they could take an animal, then they could give it back to Fish and Game or to the troopers, and then that animal would be distributed to the local food community. So we're always trying to work out a way where that can be handled so people aren't living in fear of wildlife, but we're not just allowing somebody to say, yeah, I saw that muskox out there. I was hungry, so we shot it in defense of life and property. That's not what we want to have happen. We want people abiding by the laws and regulations of the state for sustainability. But if they truly do fearful that they can take an animal in defending their life and property so they're not harmed or their family's not harmed, but that meat can be given back to communities.
Okay, we have quite a ways to go.
Just one last follow-up,
yes,
if you could, please. Thank you. I just want to make sure that there might be some communities that need a little bit, I wouldn't say lenient, but the law be addressed slightly different in those areas versus Eagle River where, you know,
yeah, and again, we try to put that meat back into the resources. And we typically will extend a hunting season if we have harvestable surplus. We just extended 3 or 4 hunting seasons for moose this year in those villages where maybe the harvestable surplus wasn't taken. We get a request because of bad snow conditions or whatever else. We'll extend seasons.
Okay. Thank you. Sure. Slide 12.
I'll move on to slide 13. Which summarizes similar information presented in earlier slides and further breaks down each funding source used by the department that makes up our funding categories. As you can see here, there is the $8 million increase that I referred to earlier for facilities maintenance or rental payments. And I did not note these changes in future slides where it shows our change records.
Can you say that one more time?
I did not note this, the $8 million increase in the change record slides that are going to be shown in the later slides. So slide 14 provides a breakdown of the department's budget for each division and section. The largest division is the Division of Commercial Fisheries with a total budget of $88 million. Next is the Division of Wildlife Conservation at $71 million. And third is the Division of Sport Fish at $55 million, followed by Statewide Support Services at $34 million. Then we have the Habitat section and the Division of Subsistence Research, which are relatively small in comparison.
Okay. Slide 15.
This slide provides a historic look back of budgeted positions. Over the past decade, the department has seen our PCN account go down until a recent increase in the last few years. However, at the same time, our budget had grown and the remaining staff had to take on extra work. Our staff are at capacity and we have added some additional PCNs these last few years to help address the workload and provide support for ongoing work of the department.
Okay, next slide.
Slide 16 shows our position vacancy history. I want to remind the committee that the department has field seasons during the year. Those seasons can vary based on the type of assessments and other field work being performed. Roughly half of the workforce for commercial fisheries and sport fish are permanent, part-time seasonal employees. Seasonal employees peak during field season, low vacancy, and during the off-season, high vacancy. Roughly 74% of the vacancies for those two divisions are part-time seasonals. Recruitments are currently underway, so if you guys know anyone.
Okay.
We do have other vacancies and have noticed challenges in filling IT positions and positions specifically in more rural areas due to housing and connectivity issues. As shown on the graph, there is a rather large dip in the vacancy percentage between FY17 and FY19 when 91 positions were deleted. A lot of these positions were vacant, which caused our vacancy percentage to lower.
Okay. Did you have a question?
Yes, sir.
Representative Tomaszewski.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. Through the chair, you mentioned earlier that you had about 1,440 employees. How many of those employees telework or work from home?
Commissioner.
During COVID, we were very flexible in having positions work at home, but since then we've been trying to get them back into the office, and I would say a vast majority now are back into the offices. We have several positions that are really hard to fill, like analyst programmers, a couple of our, I'll use analyst programmers as an example. These people like to work alone. They're in high demand. So we're very flexible in letting them work from home if they want to retain them, knowing that we would be very difficult to replace them. But almost all the other positions we're trying to bring back into the office. And we're the only time I really sign telework agreements now that are associated with something is if there's a physical or some kind of a personal issue. For instance, if somebody's got a family issue, a mother or something that's in sick or a father that's sick out in lower 48, or somebody requires medical care, a child, we'll let them work out of state or at home for some period of time. But we're slowly bringing people back in.
So follow up.
Follow up.
So can we get, you probably don't have the exact number right now, but you can probably follow up with the committee as to the approximation of how many teleworkers you have?
Yeah. Okay. Do you want them full-time or part-time?
Whatever.
Okay.
Yeah, whatever.
You can
probably both would be great.
Yeah.
Thanks.
You can route that through the chair. Question from Co-Chair Shragi.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Josephson. Along those same lines, I'm curious. There's been a lot of reporting recently about how I think 25% of our state workforce now is out-of-state employees that are coming up and filling jobs, doing good work for us, but those are jobs I'd love to see filled by Alaskans. I'm curious to what extent the Department of Fish, what to what extent you are experiencing that same level of reliance on out-of-state workers to fill jobs.
Well, again, as I said earlier, the only places where I sign out-of-state telework agreements anymore is if there's some kind of family or medical issue and somebody requires care. I might do it for schooling if we need somebody that's really actively trained in something, but almost all of our employees now no longer are working out of state unless there's some kind of medical reason.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. Slide 17.
This.
Yes. Representative Allard.
Okay, thank you, and through the chair. You said you were trying, and I heard you say that you're not really approving anymore unless they have, like, a medical emergency for family, which, or their data analysis or something, which I disagree with a lot of what you said. But my other concern is, are the ones that are already out of state, are you bringing those back? Or then the ones that are teleworking from home, are you bringing those back part-time or full-time? I mean, you say trying, you're the boss.
Yeah.
Commissioner.
Almost all the telework agreements that we had signed early on during the COVID crisis, those people, they were short-term. They were
okay
for some period of time. I understand that some people want to work from home for a variety of different reasons, and they're good employees. We want to retain them. But we need to have connectivity between our management and research staff. So we're trying to bring people back into the office and trying to get them back into the routine of coming into the office. We're a little bit flexible. We don't necessarily want to make sure that somebody's in there 5 days a week, but we want to make sure that they're in there and they're performing their work function. So we've tied our telework agreements to performance. And if they're not performing, they're in the office. If they're performing, they can be out of the office for a day or two a week. But we're trying to get people back in and get them back connected into our workforce.
May I just do a small follow-up?
Yes.
Apologize,
follow
Chair.
Up.
Thank you. You say trying again.
Yeah.
So when you say trying, are you saying come into the office and they're saying no? Are you saying trying and they're, like, what do you mean by trying?
Yeah. They're coming back into the office.
When you say, okay, yeah. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Chair.
All right, slide 17.
So this slide shows the highlights for the FY26 budgetary changes for the Commercial Fisheries Division. First, we have the Southeast Region Fisheries Management component. They are asking for a one-time increment to maintain groundfish projects for assessment and management obligations to maintain current operations. We've had
And through the chair, groundfish are things like rockfish, pollock, cod. They're the non-salmon species.
Please continue, Director.
In the Central Region Fisheries Management components, we are asking to add a position for a full-time boat officer 3 for the newly acquired research vessel to be the second in command. If you remember last year, Trident donated a vessel to the department, and it is currently being retrofitted for the upcoming season.
Representative Galvin.
Thank you, through the chair. I'm just curious to know if you could give us a ballpark on the cost of a fisheries management survey. I see there you have a general fund authority for surveys and assessment, through the chair. And it's at I think, $716,000. So is that for one survey, or is it?
So maybe I can touch through with that. This last year, in the waning hours of the legislature, we lost Commercial Fishery Entry Commission funding dollars. Mm-hmm. And that basically funded a lot of different stock assessment programs throughout the state. Some of those are $100,000, some were $60,000. The governor this year to reverse that $716,000 cut, unanticipated cut that we had. As a result, we lost a bunch of research programs across the state. He's fulfilled that now. He's put money in the budget and general fund money to replace that now. So we can restore those programs that were cut. It's no one single program. It's a whole series of different programs, and we can get you the actual, I think we actually he'll be reading this off here shortly, what actual projects are going to be funded. But that's basically an unanticipated cut that happened last year. As a result, we had to cut programs all throughout the state, and the governor recognized that that's important work to do, so we put it back into our base budget using general funds.
Follow
up? Yes, follow up.
Thank you. So I think what I heard is it's hit and miss in terms of the exact price for that, but it's anywhere between $60,000 and $100,000, and there are several that need to be done that you need to play catch up with.
That's true. You know, if we do some of our Marine assessment programs, those could be $100,000, $200,000 a piece. So.
Thank you.
On the subject of assessments, I had a visit from someone from Bristol Bay Development Economic Development Corporation, I believe. They've had a capital budget item on CHUM assessments that is depleted, and they're looking to make a base item in the operating budget for $500,000 to continue work done out of Dutch Harbor, but it impacts Bristol Bay. Are you familiar with this item?
Yeah, I am. I think this one, Michael Link probably came to you.
Yes.
And this is research that's being done to assess the intercept of chum salmon that are headed for western Alaskan streams. And what they're doing now is they're taking genetic samples in the trawl fishery and determining the contribution of the intercept of western Alaskan versus Asian chum that are caught in those fisheries. They did a test program this last year. It showed a lot of promise. It's still a little bit away from implementation, but we're gaining valuable insights into both the distribution and spatial timing of the intercept of western Alaskan chum, and it basically now has formed the foundation for a movement at the council to provide a conservation corridor, move western Alaskan chum through that BC's and trawl fishery. That's in front of the council right now. So.
But was not an item funded in the budget. Should we be concerned about that?
Yeah. At the time that we put the budget together, that's work was still being conducted, and we're just getting briefed now on the results of that work.
Okay. All right.
I think it was funded last year as a capital project.
Yeah, several years, I guess.
Yeah.
Director, take us where you want us to go.
All right. I think we are on the statewide fisheries management component.
Yes.
There are three changes that are being requested. One is the state vessel, vehicle, and aircraft maintenance project for divisional maintenance needs. The division has 6 research vessels and 5 aircraft, and they must contract this work out to maintain all of these vessels and aircraft. We are asking for $450,000 of unrestricted general fund. The next item on the list is the $716,000 that Representative Galvin mentioned to support surveys and assessment projects located throughout the state. If the division does not receive this increment, the following projects will end: the Judd Lake Weir Togiak Herring Assessment, Prince William Sound Trawl Survey, Chilatna Lake Weir, Lower Yukon Test Fishery, Kabuk River Test Fishery, AYK Sonar Funding, and the Sandy River Weir. In addition, the division will exit the Craig office and the Kuskokwim Area Bethel Test Fishery will be reduced. And I do want to add that the Craig office has multiple divisions in it, so it will not completely close that office.
You said the Crate office?
Craig.
Craig.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah, Southeast. Right. Gotcha. Okay.
The last item is a one-time increment to replace the genetics conservation laboratory equipment to support in-season genetic stock identification used to inform fisheries management. The current equipment being used has exceeded its useful life. And this is a $175,000 ask of fish and game funds.
Okay. Slide 18.
On to the Division of Sport Fisheries. And the Anchorage and Fairbanks Hatcheries is requesting $100,000 in federal authority and $100,000 in fish and game fund authority to maintain enhancement activities. One thing to note is that this RDU, Results Delivery Unit, does not have any Fish and Game Fund authority, which is needed to match federal funds.
Okay. Representative Ballard.
Thank you. You mentioned Anchorage. Did that include Eagle River? Chugiak Eagle River, we have.
Commissioner.
Yeah, so the hatchery is on base, so it serves all of Anchorage and South Central Alaska.
Thank you.
Director, can you say that the last thing you said again, you noted the absence of something in the budget to have a match. Can you say that sentence again, please?
Yes. So this RDU does not have any Fish and Game Fund authority currently in FY25. And so we are asking for it in FY26 to match the federal funds.
Okay. Slide 19.
The Division of Subsistence is requesting $100,000 in statutory designated program receipt authority to cover current and future mission-critical projects that subsistence staff will work on. The two projects will be located in the Yukon and Prince William Sound, and they will be working with NPRB, which is the North Pacific Research Board.
Okay. Slide 20.
The Habitat component is requesting $100,000 in federal authority, so they have the ability to seek federal funding opportunities. An EPA award has obligated a majority of the federal funding authority, and this will allow the section to apply for and accept federal opportunities as they arise.
Okay. Slide 21.
The Division of Wildlife Conservation is requesting $217,000 in Fish and Game Fund authority to maintain their 10 aircraft and other vehicles, including snow machines and four-wheelers. They're also requesting $112,000 in unrestricted general funds to fund a biologist for the guide concession permit in SP-189.
Okay. Question from Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Josephson. Can we go back to that, the guide concession permit program fiscal note? And I certainly understand that we need to perhaps put the money up front, but when we implemented it through SB 189, aren't the guide concession programs supposed to generate enough money for their own regulatory, or is that only in the licensure side, not in the management?
No, through the chair, it's supposed to over time get to that point in time, but the stepping up of the program is going to take some money and dedicated resources to get there. So the big question is 189 was passed after the waning hours, so we're trying to figure out, you know, whether what the court is going to do with that. And then once the court acts, if you have it in front of you again, whether you pass it. Last time it passed, it didn't have a fiscal note attached to it, just the way it got passed. So this year we're trying to get in front of it and pass the fiscal piece of it. I think you're right. I think over time it'll probably evolve into something that pays for itself through the fees, but to step it into place, it's going to take both resources from Fish and Game and DNR to implement.
One follow-up. Thank you, Chair Josephson. Commissioner, and I know this may not be at the top of your head, but how long do you think it will take for those guide concession programs to be self-paying from the state's general fund perspective? Is that 5 years or 10 years, or is it, you know?
I'm trying to think back to this legislation through the chair. I think it's supposed to be tried out in an area first. I think Unit 19 is the one where they're looking at it first, and then it's supposed to gradually expand out of there through the Board of Fish and the Big Game Guide Services Board. You're right. Most of that work is going to be front-end loaded. I probably guess 5 years would probably be a good time frame to look at.
Thank you.
Commissioner, I know where Unit 13 and 16 is, but 19, where's 19?
It's over by the upper Kuskokwim, up in that Unit 19, next to McKinley, next to Denali right now.
Okay.
It's one of the places where we've had most of the conflicts. We've actually closed unguided hunting in that area, and now trying to find a way to move forward with that, which is probably the first place the board will look at taking a guide concession program.
Okay. All right, slide 22.
So slide 22 shows statewide support services. We are asking to delete a full-time administrative officer in administrative services. This is a cut of 28,000 UGF. The position was funded with 25% UGF and 75% IA authority. We are going to use the other funding to cover department-wide operational expenses, including like rentals and stuff like that. The second item on the list is the boards of fisheries and games. They are asking for 14,000 UGF increase for the guide concession permit, SB 189, to cover the increased expenses specific to upcoming meeting locations. The third item on the list is for the Commissioner's Office, and we are requesting a multi-year operating appropriation unit to allow the department to accept fishery disaster funds from the Pacific States Fisheries Marine Fisheries Commission. And I want to make note that the $0 on this means it's unlimited.
Okay. Slide 23.
So the Division of Subsistence has one request to accommodate work partnering with the Chugiak Regional Resource Commission to gather mission-critical subsistence resource use data in Prince William Sound. This is a FY25 supplemental request.
Okay, my turn, I guess, again. Okay. Capital budgets. So we have a couple of them. First one's the Marine Science Program. When I became commissioner first year, 7 years ago now, one of the things I figured out is that we were a pretty good handle on what's happening in freshwater, but we really had no idea what's happening in marine waters. So we put together a Marine Science Program. That program has grown now. I think next year you're going to see a request for us to put it in the base budget, but we're going to put one more year in the capital budget. But it's really starting to piece together what's happening in that first year out in the ocean. The RV Equinox that's now funded, and you're going to potentially fund a second position so we can get that boat out to sea, is one of the key pieces to do that research in that marine science program. We started that program off the Yukon, just north of the Yukon, and we started finding out that we're actually able to predict what's going to come back in 3 or 4 years based on the survival of both juvenile chum and Chinook salmon in those nearshore waters in that first couple months out at sea. We've expanded that work now to include the southern near out in front of the Yukon, down below the Yukon in the Kuskokwim River area, and we're starting to move that research now into the Gulf of Alaska. So it's a really good program, and I'm pretty proud of it, and hope you'll fund that going forward. In response to the Gulf of Alaska Chinook Salmon ESA petition that's out there, I think, again, we found out that we have a pretty good handle on what's happening in freshwater, but we really don't know what's happening in marine waters in terms of intercept and a lot of the genetic composition out there. This is going to start answering that question over a 3 or 4 or 5 year period of time. We still have 100,000 snook that are harvested in marine waters fisheries. We've closed down almost all the fresh waters in Cook Inlet and Kodiak and Alaska Peninsula. But we want to know what those stock compositions of those marine fisheries are moving forward.
Representative Galvin.
Thank you. And I appreciate the work that's going on to get more answers. What my question is, this is 5.6 UGF, and it doesn't say over a period of time, like for 5 years, so it's just indefinitely for now?
I think a capital budget gives you, 5 years to spend it?
Typically.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Galvin. This is the largest year. It goes down in subsequent years, and the total ask is just under $22 million for the capital ask.
Okay, thank you.
But, we need to know what's happening. A lot of those stocks that are harvested out in those marine fisheries are potentially not Alaskan stocks, but they are stocks potentially listed in the Columbia River and other places. So we start needing to piece that together. Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Fund, that got a big boost in recent years because of Build Back American infrastructure money. So this is basically money that we can use to fund. We fund subsistence research with it. We fund assessments of rebuilding stocks. We replace culverts, a variety of other things across the state. It's done through a grant program that is administered by the department. Of course, it's all federal receipts. Pacific Coastal Salmon Treaty Chinook Fishery Mitigation. We took a 8 years ago now, we took a hit on the amount of salmon we could take under the Pacific Salmon Treaty as part of a negotiated settlement. As part of that negotiated settlement, we got money coming from the federal government to replace some of that lost revenue to our fishermen. So in Southeast Alaska, we're providing mitigation to fishermen by basically producing Chinook salmon in some of the private nonprofit hatcheries and providing additional harvest opportunity that don't count against our treaty allocation. And then the proceeds of state-owned sale of state-owned vessels and aircraft, that typically goes back to the general fund, but if we bought it, we'd like to keep it inside the department so that we can use that to buy new things as other things wear out. In wildlife 25. Conservation, we're asking for $100,000 of Fish and Game Fund authority. And that is basically to, again, proceeds of state-owned vessels and aircraft to come back into us.
Slide 26.
Sport fisheries, again, we want to get the proceeds from sale from federal purchases put back into the Fish and Game Fund. We are advised by Department of Law that if we bought them a Fish and Game Fund, we have to put it back into the Fish and Game Fund. On the sport fish, recreational boating and access, angler access, by law, under PR Dingell-Johnson, we have to put a certain amount of money every year into providing access. This is that portion of it, and we have to match it with the Fish and Game Fund, so that's the authority. We build boat launches. In Southeast Alaska, the North Douglas boat launch was built with this money. It basically provides boating access throughout the state. And then we have $500,000 for mission-critical replacement. And this is to replace outboards and skiffs that are beyond our useful life. 95% of the current inventory needs to be replaced, and we're trying to get ahead of it here with this ask.
Okay. All right. We sped up.
Thank you.
Sure.
Questions?
Yes. Representative Tomaszewski, then Jamie.
Thank you, Co-Josephson. Through the chair, back on slide 5, you said you turned $250 million investment, 70, which is general fund, into a return of over $14 billion annually. I would love to see that from the permanent fund. and I'm not sure that we don't want to start giving you some of that fund to grow those kind of returns. I'm sure it's not fiscally, but can you kind of just go through what does that $14 billion annually consist of?
It consists of return on commercial fisheries and the ex-vessel value of commercial fisheries and the employment that we're providing across the state. On the sport fish side, it's both charter and non-charter fishing. On the wildlife side, it's wildlife viewing as well as hunting and tag receipts and the contribution of hunters coming into our state. I'll get you the actual numbers. We put them in here and we took it out for time, but I'll get you the breakdown of where that came from so you can look at it.
Representative Jimmy.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson, and through the chair. My question has to circle back around to subsistence. So the Department of Fish and Game is not using subsistence research and monitoring it to inform the Board of Fisheries in the decisions they make. The number of management plans incorporating subsistence information has dropped from 180 to 75 between 2000-2025. Is there less subsistence information being produced and transmitted? And how do you explain this failure?
Well, I don't think we're failing necessarily. We're using the money that we have to basically inform decisions. Do we update a survey, subsistence use survey, every year in every area? No. But when we basically now are conducting more surveys than I think we have in the last 4 or 5 years. We've sought funding sources through the North Pacific Research Board, through federal subsistence programs. In the Yukon, we have a big survey now going on in the Yukon. So I think we're catching up on some of those surveys as we're moving forward. So I'm pretty proud of what we've done over the last 3 or 4 years in getting additional money into that division through federal funding.
Follow up. To me, it doesn't seem like you are catching up because my district has gone with really poor subsistence seasons, leaving many families empty freezers, failure of subsistently filling their lugyaks, their sheds for their families. So I think you need to not say that you're making progress, but you're willing to attempt to.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. So now we have Representative Galvin, followed by staff.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson, through the chair. My question is about the equipment. I see page 26, skiffs and offboards for mission-critical equipment, and that's under the capital budget. And then slide 21, I believe, was aircraft and four-wheelers, but I'm not sure if that was perhaps it was repairing them, or was it also to purchase? And I guess I'm just asking for clarification as to why one would be under operating and one is under capital budget, if there is an explanation.
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, those are in two different divisions, and they are different. The capital request is to replace what has, like, what needs to be replaced. And in wildlife conservation, they need to maintain what they currently have.
Thank you.
Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you.
If I could just add real quick.
Yes,
I had no idea when I became commissioner that I had an Army and an Air Force and a Marine Corps and a Navy. And these things all require maintenance. I was amazed at how much it just cost a dry dock of one of our major research vessels and actually get it back at sea. It's impressive.
Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Justin, through the chair to Director or Commissioner Lang. I appreciate you being here. I did want to touch on one thing that Representative Jimmy had kind of mentioned earlier, just so the public's not confused. So, you know, where I live in the interior, you know, I have lots of friends when I go out to Galena or Keokuk or Ruby or Nulato or something like that, and they would look at the state's management of fish and the fact that we are failing because they don't have any fish. So can we maybe just clarify that our intention is not that we want to make sure that subsistence fishing and hunting rights are well protected and well stocked, and we're attempting to do everything that we can to ensure that if you do live on the Yukon or if you live on the Kuskokwim or down on the Delta like that, that our objective here, and I think we're pretty much all in agreement of that, is we want to see that you have a plentiful subsistence season, through the chair.
Commissioner.
Yeah, I fully agree with that statement. And one of the things we did when we negotiated settlement on the Yukon, the recent agreement with the Yukon and with Canada, is that while we were trying to rebuild those runs and get them back to where we can provide not only subsistence but harvestable surpluses for commercial fisheries, hopefully someday, we're going to allow some limited opportunity for cultural purposes moving forward. So I have regulations out for review, I think, right now that will provide some opportunity for me to permit an educational permit so that we can put fish in the hands of people, even though we're not meeting escapement, to preserve culture while we're rebuilding the runs. So.
Any further comments for the good of the order, Commissioner?
No, just thank you. This is the best part of the job. You guys fund us, so this is an opportunity for us to talk back and forth, and I really appreciate it. Thank you.
We thank you for being here. So, yes, I'd like to thank the commissioner. Yes. Sure. Representative Jimmy has a question.
Thank you, Co-Chair Johnson, and through the chair. And I'm not trying to say anything to be mean or whatever, but I can honestly say the management from the Board of Fisheries is hurting my district. The fishing schedule is unpredictable. Short openers make it difficult for people to get out and go to their fish camps. The cost of fishing gear, gas is pretty high out there. And on the Kuskokwim, when people are harvesting, more than half of their or all of their harvest is going to waste because they are fishing in a rainy season when it should be a dry season. And and even in Chivac, people are not filling their freezer because it's set out way too far away from the river. This is supposed to be a time in the summer when families come together, and that's how we reinstate our family and reinforce. And this is setting up for families to fail, where it causes nobody to gather, nobody to work together from grandchild to grandparent, from grandpa to grandson, to work together. And to me, it's very important because that's what I do with my family. It's what we all look for and what we pass down from what we learn to, from, I'm passing down what I learned from my grandmother to my daughter, and hopefully someday my grandson when he comes up for the summer. Why have you failed to build subsistence calendar that works for the people in my district? From when it's rainy in July, that's when everybody is forced to fish when it's not in June, when it's dry and it's accessible. Even when the fish are all accounted for, the elders know it back there, and I think you should be reaching out to them as well. There should be a connection with the science and the traditional from the people that be able to work together and come to a better solution.
Well, through the chair, if I could say, I am restrained from managing fisheries in the Kuskokwim River. That's done by the Federal Subsistence Board, so I'm a little sensitive about that one. But you know,
you mean you wish you weren't restrained?
I wish I wasn't restricted, okay. Because I tried to open a sockeye fishery in the Kuskokwim River, which resulted in a restraining order from me trying to manage for subsistence uses on that river. So hopefully we can get back to where we have one management regime out that on that lower river. I think we are. I visited an individual in the lower Yukon in Grayling, and we had provided in terms of protecting king salmon moving to the Yukon, moving up into the Yukon territories in Canada. We allowed dip net fisheries, and we had a long talk on the riverbank, and it was just an opportunity for him to get his hands on fish, even though it wasn't a traditional gill net, with a dip net that he could teach his son how to catch fish. And it was just, those are the things we're trying to do as we move forward. Long-term sustainability, we got to protect, but we have to figure out ways we can preserve culture while we're rebuilding these runs. That's what we're trying to do.
So the Board of Fish has no authority over this seasonality issue, the rainy season?
In the Kuskokwim River and within the refuge, we have no. We're banned from managing right now as a state.
Question?
Yes.
So who does have the authority?
The Federal Subsistence Board has succumbed that authority, and we're challenging that in court. Hopefully to get back to a single set of management.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Jimmy, I really appreciate what you said all the same. I really heard what you said. Our next scheduled House Finance Committee meeting is tomorrow, February 25th at 1:30. At that meeting, we'll hear from the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. They'll present their FY26 budget overview. With that, and seeing no other business, we will adjourn this meeting at 3:13. Thank you. Thank you.